fashion is a powerful tool of communication. In recent times, the runway has become a place for activism and overt political messages. And even though the catwalks in Paris and Milan feel far removed from here in the heartland, there is a lot of inspiration and influence that is spawned from Wisconsin. We're talking about the place of fashion in our society, how clothes make us, how we make clothes here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Carolyn Callenborn is an associate professor in the Textiles and Fashion Design program at UW-Madison. She's Jane Thiele Professor of Human Ecology, helped found the Global Artisans Initiative. She's also faculty director of the Threads Fashion Show that is coming up here on April 29th. Carolyn, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Good morning.
And Holly Easland is a professor of apparel, a professional apparel designer who freelances. She's also an associate lecturer at UW-Madison. In more than 25 years in the industry, she's worked for companies including American Girl and Land's End. She's also spent a decade in costume design. Holly, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Well, Carolyn, let's start with you. From the dawn of the screen-printed t-shirt, or before, people have used fashion to tell others what they care about. That ranges from simple statements to branding or fandom, politics. What place does fashion have in our time?
That's a really big question. So I kind of think of fashion and clothes a little bit like food. You know, it's something we all have to have. We all have to wear clothes. We all have to eat. And there's different ways of approaching that. We can do things that are purely for function, or we can do things for expression. You can make a meal for somebody because just to show them that you care about them. And I think the same thing can happen with clothing, that that clothing can be something that's just purely functional and covers us, or it can be something where we express ourselves and we can see what other people are interested in, other people are. I think for me personally, I'm most interested in the personal expression, like what each person has to say versus how you're judging someone else about what they're wearing.
So, they're an extension of your own identity.
Exactly. And it's very much about identity. And it has been like, you know, forever.
Yeah.
You know, for very long. There's nothing new in clothing being about identity. And I think that maybe it's shifting a little bit more right now, where the idea of, rather than a big fashion thing coming from someplace else and being sort of like, oh, that's what we're supposed to follow, it's being a little bit more of people sort of creating their own thing, sort of like slow food and local food. The same thing, I think, with fashion's happening, like slow fashion and local fashion and things that are meaningful versus just what's the most important or popular or I think it's shifting right now.
Holly, how do you use clothes?
Another big question. I would agree with Carolyn that clothing, since the beginning of time, has been a personal expression and also a tribal expression. Mm-hmm. And even though we may not think in tribal ways, we are all parts of tribes, and we can easily cue each other which tribe we're on by what we wear. Just the most subtle clues are found within our clothing.
And this has gone back through the ages, from the start.
From the beginning.
Yeah. The farther, and especially if you start studying history of fashion, there's all kinds of cues. Certain colors were only worn by certain classes, and there was a time where you, if you wore clothes that were above your class, like, you could be thrown in jail for quite a while. And
the sumptuary laws.
Yeah, mm-hmm. The wrong colors were only worn by certain classes and certain types of, and that's in European history. But if you look in other cultures, there are similar things as well. Certain people only wore, certain garments are only worn by certain people, and signifiers on, you know, patterns will show like what group you're from, or what area you're from, or even a specific town or village. And that's still true in a lot of parts of the world.
Well, fast forward to 2018, and mm-hmm. Holly, you're continually paying attention to who's wearing what and when, but it's not all about the art. Sometimes it's about being taken seriously. Tell us about what you're wondering about Facebook founder Mark Zuckerberg's wardrobe choices next week when he testifies.
Well, I thought it was interesting that a news commentator pointed out the fact that by his wardrobe choices, he infantilizes his projected image. And so I'm curious to know what will he wear next week. Is he going to dress like a child who...
The hoodie, right?
The hoodie and jeans and tennies that you could put your five-year-old in and take them to daycare. Or will he put on a more professional edifice? We'll see.
Carolyn, when creating looks, how do fashion designers think about the world and what's happening in our society when they're creating garments?
So that's kind of... It depends which fashion designer you're talking about. So, okay. Like... I think different people in different companies or different individuals might have different ways that they go about thinking about who they're designing for. Some companies are very focused on, like, this is my client. They have a specific name and an age, and like this is what they like to do and this is what they don't like to do, and they're very much targeting that particular customer. And there's other companies that are sort of trying to see what might happen with what they might do, or they're looking for more different kinds of expressions, or just being more experimental with it. So it really kind of depends on the designer what they decide to do.
Do you think designers are getting more pressure to design clothes that are free from politics or clash, or do they want that? Are they driving toward that?
I would have a hard time saying designers as a whole,
as
because
a whole.
There's so many. Uh-huh. It depends which group of designers you're talking about. And
sure.
I think that there's probably some of each. I do think that it's moving more towards like smaller designers and like the ability of, because of the internet, the ability of small groups to make a statement versus one big designer or, you know, small group of designers telling everybody, you know, this is what's popular right now. There's a lot more, the customer is getting more sense of this is what I want. And there's a lot more sort of micro enterprises building up, sort of like, you know, like artisan cheeses are happening and things like that. I think the same thing's happening within the fashion industry. But it's hard to say. It's like, what do chefs do? It's like, there's a lot of different kinds of chefs, and it depends who you're working for. So,
talking right now with Carolyn Kallenborn. She's an associate professor in the Textiles and Fashion Design program at UW-Madison. Holly Easland here as well is a professional apparel designer. She's an associate lecturer in the program at UW-Madison. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you consider fashion frivolous, or do you see real value in using a garment to show your support for a cause or to reject a cultural movement? Should clothes be about activism? Do you think dressing a specific way is effective at communicating your stance on issues? 800-642-1234. Tweet us at WPR Mornings. Let's spring forward here. The red carpets brimmed with fashion as a critique on society. Hollywood stars showed up in black this spring as they took to social media to weigh in on the Me Too movement, especially with A-listers accusing Harvey Weinstein of sexual misconduct and rape. Holly, what do you think that flash and blackout accomplished?
I think it was really unifying for women. I think it was a powerful thing to do, and I think it helped women to feel comfortable that it was okay to say Me Too.
But what about fashion? I mean, because designers are like, okay, so the color is black, so we got to design in black, we got to dress people in black. Is that limiting? Is that okay?
Sometimes, well, actually, Holly does a project in the class, it's in architecture in black and white, and they can only use black and white. So it actually, you can be quite creative, just having really tight limitations sometimes, I think, can make it more fun.
And, you know, Chanel in 1926 decreed that a little black dress was really all you need.
Givenchy just died, and that was really where the black dress truly came up. Is that right?
Actually, Chanel pushed it forward before he was born.
So a lot of history there that we're working through here as we talk about fashion design on the morning show. Our wardrobes, what we decide to put on every day, they're a reflection of the world around us. One writer described fashion as acting as a cultural time capsule. We're having a conversation about the role of fashion design, the contribution made here from Wisconsin on the morning show. Carolyn Callenborn and Holly Easland are with us. They teach in UW-Madison's Textiles and Fashion Design program. You can join in the conversation at 800-642-1234. Should clothes be about activism? What about fashion and politics? Call in or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll pick up the conversation after a news update right here on the Ideas Network. The iconic little black dress, simple, elegant, classic, and perhaps politically charged. We're exploring the world of fashion, how the threads in our closet are influenced by the world around us, how design students come up in this age where politics and activism are becoming more embedded in clothing and trends. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. UW-Madison's Carolyn Callenborn and Holly Easland are our guides this hour. Carolyn is an associate professor in the Textiles and Fashion Design program, helped build the Global Artisans Initiative. Holly's an associate lecturer and has worked for companies like Lands' End and American Girl. You can join in the discussion at 800-642-1234. Is it right to care about the choices Hollywood stars make? Are high-profile designers and people on the red carpet social leaders? Are you a designer or sewer? How do you see current events and opinions changing your industry? Call in or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Let's bring in Dick now, joining us from La Crosse. Hi, Dick.
Hi. I have a relative that graduated from the program at Stout in Fashion Design. And we were invited to her project where they have all the students put on a fashion show. And I would advise people to do that. It's amazing. It's like 2 hours of not 1 second of downtime. The talent these kids have is phenomenal. And I know they must have a program like that in Madison, because I heard something on the radio yesterday about a program in Madison like that. But Stout's got one, and I don't know who else has one. But just as a public event, people should think about going to something like that. It's so neat.
That's really good timing for us, because we have our Threads fashion show coming up on April 29th at the Masonic Center. And it's a show put on by our students. I'm the director of the show. And we have a whole class that spends, part of the students start in the beginning of fall semester to sort of come up for the theme for the year. And then we actually only found out which garments were in it like right before spring break, like 2 weeks ago, and then the show will be in about 3 weeks from now. So it all happens very, very fast. And we do a lot of working with the other arts around campus. Theater department's very involved in it. First Wave students are involved in it. And let's see, who, and journalism, and we do videos and all kind of, they are really fun. And we kind of think of this as sort of an arts event versus, it's not, most fashion shows in the commercial world are about getting you to buy things, but we're students. We're not trying necessarily to sell stuff off the runway, so it's like, so what can we do? We have some really cool things, and we're in a wonderful university with all kinds of artistic resources available, and how do we combine that to make this sort of an experience for people?
So you can really work the cross-disciplinary aspect of it, mm-hmm. and also that there are a lot of artists out on these campuses.
It's amazing.
Who can contribute mm-hmm. to the same event.
Yeah, and we have students in our program. This is the first, we've had students from First Wave program before, and that have helped, that have been part of the performance, but this is the first year we've got a student who's actually a graduate of our program, who's also a First Wave performer. So he's going to like do some a cappella and some hip hop and some jazz, and then he'll be in his own things that he also designed and have things on the runway. And we have a dancer that's done the same thing too, so it'll be really fun.
So when your students, your design students, are inspired by causes mm-hmm. or current events, how do you help them translate their passion into fashion and into what goes on the runway in Threads?
Well, I would say for Threads, the name of our show this year is Tangled, and which seems very appropriate. And the byline,
complicated.
Yeah. The byline is our journey through a chaotic world, because that's what we were coming up. We come up
apropos,
with
apropos. Yeah, okay.
The creative direction we do sort of in the fall, and it was sort of in those weeks where the hurricanes were hitting, and then there was these, you know, there were earthquakes in Oaxaca, and between myself and people in the class, like, we knew people everywhere that were being affected, and the wildfires in California. And it was a small class, and even within this 6 or 7 people, we all directly had people that were being impacted. And so, you know, we were, you know, singing, you know, the song, It's the End of the World as We Know It, and going, you know, what are we going to do? And so anyway, we came up with this theme of Tangled, and we're still sort of working out exactly how that's going to be, because you also, at the show, it is about the students' work, and you want to celebrate their work, and you don't want to have this sort of depressing thing going on. So we're trying to figure out how to find that balance between, you know, really, you know, saying there is things going on now that it's scary, and especially for the young people. They don't know, you know, paths used to be somewhat certain before, and you would know if you're going into fashion, this is what's going to happen. But even the way fashion is being developed now, the structures aren't the same, and it's very likely that it's not going to be how it is now in 5 or 6 years. It's
how has it changed? What do you mean by that?
Well, I think, I was talking about a little bit earlier, that there's a little bit more of, like, small producers are having more, they have more say, and they can get themselves out there better because of the internet. And so there's a lot more of, I've heard of a number of models where you might buy, there might be something online, and then you order it, and then it's actually custom made by something more local, like a group local, and then there's a certain part of it that's already there, but they can adjust it to you. Like, there's a place in, what's the denim place in Chicago that just came last week?
Oh.
We have a whole speaker series, and we had a great speaker that was talking about this last week. Somebody might remember. And anyway, so so they're making jeans locally in Chicago with all producers in Chicago, and you go in, they have a showroom, they only have a short, they don't have a big line, mm-hmm. but you can go in, they fit really well, but they can make little adjustments, and they can hem the length to where you want it, and they keep really they can also keep very short inventory, like a lean inventory, and so because they're getting it done locally, and they charge a little bit more, but they're also giving a customized service. And people are like, the time where you used to go in a store and the person that worked in the store, this is like ages ago, and there was somebody that actually maybe knew you and knew your body and what fit you, and they would tell you when something came in that you liked. And, you know, in the 40s and 50s, that was really common. And now it's like you go and you try on whatever thing happens to be on the rack, which 90% of the time doesn't work. There's nobody to help you.
Right.
So people are being more interested in having somebody that can actually give a little bit of service back and do something custom for them. And because of the internet, it gives the ability for people to find each other in a way that just was not possible not very long ago. Do you want to talk about the
19th Amendment?
Yeah, that's a really good one.
There is a company that's just started in New York. It's called the 19th Amendment, after the women's voting rights.
Right.
Young designers can have their clothing made in the U.S. using this website. They will host them for a very small fee. I can't remember how much it is.
It's but like $10 a month
yeah,
or something
very,
like
very
that.
Inexpensive.
It's really reasonable.
So a young designer can really get a good launch without investing a huge amount of money, which is what usually holds people back from launching a product line.
And they find the manufacturer and everything. And so they put you do your own photos, you put it up online, and then you have to tell them which fabrics you're using and give them patterns and things. But they have a group of small manufacturers that they can source things out to. And because they're big enough, they can do something as a group to sort of represent all these small designers that you could never do on your own. And to me, that's like a game changer.
Totally disrupting
the
entire industry, turning it on its
head.
Wow. Let's go to Lori now, joining us from Hale's Corners. Hi, Lori.
Yes, good morning. I have a challenge for you folks.
Uh-oh.
We need some designers to be on the side of older adults, older female adults. I'm 82, and where I live, we're going to be having a senior prom. Mm. I'd like to get dressed up for it and not just use the caftan I bought to take on our cruise. But I don't have a princess waist anymore, and I don't see a darn thing out there in the commercial, in the stores that I can wear. I don't see it in magazines. What on earth am I going to do? Are you going to be on our side? Are you going to help us find some stuff we can wear?
Lori, thank you so much for the call. And she's got a really good point. Holly, go ahead.
She does have a really good point. I think it's tough when stores are shrinking as compared to the internet, which is expanding. And sometimes people don't want or feel comfortable using the internet to shop. There are a myriad of choices out there if you know where to look. And I think as companies online grow, they need to appeal and reach more people than they currently are, because Lori's problem is something that's come up before. There are plenty, I think there are clothes out there. I think if Lori's issue is fitting, then perhaps a tailor could help. There are alteration shops in the area that can work with people, because in terms of design, there should be nothing holding her back in regards to what she might want to wear or choose.
And I would suggest maybe also looking at a secondhand store, because there's, especially if it's just for one event, you don't want to, you know, invest a whole lot of money. But there's some really nice secondhand stores that have, you know, a big selection of things, and you can work from that. And then if you were to do something and maybe get a tailor to fix it up a little bit, but then it's not necessarily super cheap either when things are done really well. But
Correct. A
secondhand store might be a good way to start with something with a really nice quality, and then can get adjusted a little bit.
Lori, thanks so much for the call. Good luck with the prom. Let's go to Carolina in Grafton. Hi, Carolina.
Hi, good morning. I have two comments to make. One is, and they're both regarding my children. I have an 8-year-old son and a 6-year-old daughter. And when I go to the retailers, you know, the larger retailers here in town, looking for clothes for my son, he always tells me how he has very few choices when it comes to colors. They're always the dark blue, the dark gray, the dark green, camouflage, and kind of stereotypical designs on shirts. Yes, they're comfortable, but they're not necessarily very open-minded to the different likes of boys. And I wish there was a bit more opportunity to find clothes that are more diverse. Versus my daughter, who can wear a lot of layers and glitter and patterns and all these different options. So she's very limited. And then my second comment is sometimes I feel connected to clothing because of who's wearing them on the signage. I felt compelled to call Nike a couple months ago when they had a campaign portraying several black children on wearing sports clothes, and I called them and said, I love this. I feel so good walking into the store and seeing children who look like my children. That was very important to me. So just those two comments.
Oh, Carolina, thank you so much.
Holly, Carolina, I'm with you. I think the recent addition to more diverse models in children's and adults. I don't know if you ever watch Project Runway, but last season they used models of all sizes and colors. It was really, really empowering to everyone. And then in terms of the boys' clothing, that's a tough one. Boys' clothing does not sell as well as girls. Girls wear more clothes, as you would imagine. In general, girls like clothes better than boys, and so companies will focus on that. Many parents feel uncomfortable with boys making choices which are out of the average norm, dark colors. So it's a challenge to find something that's more interesting and exciting. I don't know, Carolyn, if you found that with your son.
My son wore black for many years.
So does design begin with a sketch or a swatch, or does it come from a feeling or motivation?
It comes from everywhere, depending on where you're working. And if you're working in a corporate setting, a lot of the ideas are spring out of what's doing well, what is our customer responding to? Because you have all of this information coming in from your customers, and you want to give them what they want, but yet stay a few steps ahead of them. And always projecting an idea that they're going to want this in 6 months, because you're working a year in advance, so you really have to be thinking about that.
Oh, the Christmas in July thing is real.
Yeah. It's very real.
But I think that's one of the things that's interesting, is as things change a little bit, because as a big corporation, like, they have to get a minimum of 10,000 of pretty much anything. Like, if you're getting something manufactured, you know, it's like 10,000 yards to get a, you know, a specific fabric in a certain, you know, color or pattern, or that many t-shirts. I mean, it's just a lot of stuff. And so you can't make a mistake. So you have to kind of stay in a safe zone. And then that's where it leaves out a lot of people, like people that might want something more interesting for their kids, or an older group, or a different that doesn't fit in that, you know, in the bell curve, in the main part of the bell curve. It's always those edges that are difficult. And I think, you know, industry, they have to stay within that, because that's the only way they can survive, because they have so much money invested. But that's one of the things that some a little bit more smaller and local manufacturers might be able to hit some of those markets in a different way, because they're having leaner inventory, or they can directly deal with their customers.
I think I was reading about Gap yesterday, where just buying a ton of fabric in just of various different ways, and then they's like, okay, this is our allotment, and now we're going to craft from here as quickly as we can with different trends. So they just start with a palette of swatch or of their fabric and go from there.
Right. And it's up to the designers to come up with the fresh new ideas using that material.
So still kind of working in a box, right?
Yeah.
Let's bring in Mark joining us from Appleton. Hi, Mark.
Morning. Thanks for taking my call. I enjoyed the commentary about the tribal representation of the clothing we wear. However, being kind of cynical, I always had the impression that manufacturing dictated our tribal attire, that we walk into a store and they're telling us what they want us to buy with very little input from us tribal members. Thank you.
Mark, thanks. Is it more of a two-way street now, or is advertising really influencing?
I think maybe it's getting to a two-way street. It's not here yet, but I think it's turning that way a little bit
right.
more.
The wheels work together.
H&M launched its new millennial-focused brand this week. The new collection is supposed to not follow trends or churn out endless different styles, but sells a limited selection of quote-unquote affordable luxury clothing. We're talking about fashion and culture and how it all comes together here in Wisconsin on The Morning Show. Carolyn Kallenborn and Holly Easland stay with us. They're from UW-Madison's Textiles and Fashion Design Program. You can join in with your questions, 800-642-1234. When has fashion worked against you? Are you judged for the clothes you choose? Have you changed your wardrobe to better fit in your workplace? Tell us about it. Post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll pick up the conversation after this news update here on the Ideas Network. Poor working conditions and low wages have long been a concern in the garment industry. A country like Bangladesh has more than 4,000 garment factories, about 4 million people working in them. Vast majority of workers are women. It's another through line in this conversation about fashion design here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Carolyn Callenborn is here. She's an associate professor in the Textiles and Fashion Design program at UW-Madison. She helped found the Global Artisans Initiative. Holly Easland is a professional apparel designer and associate lecturer at UW-Madison. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you consider fashion frivolous, or do you see real value in using a garment to show your support for a cause or to reject a cultural movement? Should clothes be about activism? Do you think dressing a certain way is effective at communicating your stance on issues? Call in or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Well, Carolyn, I know before we launch into this next question that fashion is happening somewhere else, not in the Midwest. I wanted to just get back to Mark's point in Appleton saying a lot of what we see in our clothing is dictated by someone else. Mm-hmm. Is there anything more you want to say on that?
Well, I think that, you know, they're putting out what they think people are going to want for the most part because that's what they need to do. But for me, like, clothing and dressing is about authenticity. It's about where, you know, who I am and what fits me. And one store might say that this is what's popular right now. I think it's an odd thing to say because I teach fashion, but I don't care that much about what's popular. Mm. And I care more about, like, what's really good quality and what feels right, like, when I wear it, which would be very different than what you would feel right wearing. And how do we find those places where we can each find that thing that, you know, the little something you put on that it just makes you smile when you see it, or something that's comfortable, or every once in a while you put something on and you just feel a little bit more confident, or it can change your mood, or you feel more playful because you're going to go do something else, or more serious. And the way that I can put clothing on to sort of change how I feel. Mm. And so I've always been personally been more interested in that than what's fashionable and how we can use clothing to do that. And then coming back a little bit to your political questions about that too, is that I think when we're being authentic to ourselves and we support those things that people that are being authentic in the creation of their work as well, that it is kind of a political statement to be buying things from, you know, I sort of like this artisanal cheese and artisanal beer analogy, because when you're buying something from somebody that's making it from something they're proud of, that's, I think, a political statement too, and it's an economic statement. It's supporting something that you believe in. And so that's where a lot of my emphasis, I think about, my biggest thing is, like, what's possible with what we can do with this, rather than specifically what's happening right now. But where could we go with this, and how can we rethink how we think about clothing?
You know, Holly, as I was pitching this topic, I was like, you know, standing there and saying, you know what? Wisconsin has so much to do about fashion. The retail fashion giant Kohl's based right here. We've got Wisconsinite Jerry Chazen, one of the founders of Liz Claiborne, who had UW-Madison, you know, as his roots. We have employers you work for, American Girl, Land's End. So is it fair to say that fashion is very much a part of the Midwest?
Absolutely. We also have Colony Brands, which was founded by a UW alum and has started as a cheese company and
fitting
mail order cheese, and now offers a wide range of brands for women across the nation. We currently learned that another UW alum, Virgil Abloh, who has been a designer with Kanye West and has had design collaborations with a number of companies in the United States and internationally, has become the creative director for Louis Vuitton. And for an African-American man to be put in that position is quite a statement in today's world of fashion.
And he's a UW alum as well, but in engineering. He was not from the fashion department.
Right.
But clothing, construction, and making is very much like engineering. It's a really similar way that you have to think. It's just with soft materials instead of hard.
Well, Carolyn, this week you returned from Nepal.
Yeah.
And you are working with this Global Artisans Initiative. What is that about?
Mm-hmm. Well, this came about. I mostly work in Mexico. That's where my main work. I work with artisans in Oaxaca, and a lot of traditional weavers and embroiderers. And I have a colleague, Jennifer Angus, who works in Nepal and India, and another colleague, Leslie Sager, who works in Kenya. And so we've kind of worked together, and it has a long history that I won't go into, but it was built up through multiple things, support that happened at UW. But at the moment, we each have an area that we work in, and I work with artisans down in Oaxaca. And we look at people that are producing things. A lot of them are home produced and small businesses.
Cottage industries.
Mm-hmm. And like really literally in the home with the looms and the chickens and the kids running around. It's awesome. They're really great. And they're in Oaxaca specifically, the handcraft and the artisan work really helps support the culture there, and specifically the indigenous culture. I work a lot with Zapotec people, and the ability of them to continue their art making or their craft making, which is a part of their culture. Their cultural symbols are in there, and it's been in their history for a very long time. And if they can continue to sell it, they will continue to do it, and it supports the communities and makes the communities stronger. It's just part of, you know, it's part of their language and their music and the food and the way the community all interacts is all within every piece that they make. And so we line up, we work with our students and with different artisans there to help make a slightly more saleable product. Sometimes it's just color trends. Color sense is very different down there than it is here if we're trying to sell them here. And things like quality control, where, you know, they make one thing. Somebody might make something. And this is true for all designers, no matter what your background is. You might make one that's really great, but can you make three more that everything is all
can
finished?
Can
you replicate it? And scaling things up is really difficult. So in some ways, it's sort of like the same teaching I do with my students here, except that the artisans I work with have a lot more skills. And so it's more like having graduate students, you know, where they're coming in with a lot of background, but you can just give them these little drops and they just go, oh, cool, and then they take off. So we've got, we send interns down there to work directly with the artisans. And then we have had people here. We actually have a couple people from India visiting this week, and they talk about the sort of the cottage industries and the making. And again, it's something that gives, it's meaningful work for the people, and it's also helping support the culture in often places that, and especially for women in many of the situations too, where they don't have a lot of other income, and then this gives them some income. And then for me, you know, then I have, and or whether I'm having it, I'm selling this to somebody else, it's a product that has meaning to the person that made it, has meaning to me. I know the story behind it. I know the people behind it. And we also work to make these really high quality pieces. So it's not like a pity purchase. It's not charity. It's like helping people actually make a solid living because they're making something great.
You're helping an economy.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Let's go
through
to
art and culture. So
let's go to Michael now, joining us from New Glarus. Hi, Michael.
I have a frustration as well, just like the caller from Grafton regarding boys finding clothing that they like. But I also wanted to add that most of the cotton that fashion industry uses is from India, and those Indian producers use pesticides, and most of the organic cotton comes from India. So you're still dealing with a huge, huge carbon footprint when you're buying something out of convenience from a large retailer. And I think that we're kind of still in the 1950s when it comes to the fashion industry. And I'd also like to say that if we're living in a northern climate, we should be dealing with fashion like the Scandinavian culture rather than worrying about what people are doing in Paris and Milan. And I look forward to your responses. Thank you.
Oh, thank you, Michael.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. It's like 100%. You know, the impact and the carbon footprint of clothing is very, it's one of the worst. And textiles are actually really bad. And even organic cotton, when it's grown, it uses a tremendous amount of water and a lot of physical human not very good working conditions. And I actually think we're worse than we were in the 50s because there's a lot more pesticide use. The other thing that's happened that I think is just really sad is there's this consumption society now where we buy stuff that's made poorly. It's cheap, and so we go, oh, great, I got this T-shirt for $5, and isn't that great? And so you buy it, and then maybe if you don't like it, you throw it out because you only paid $5 for it. And the same thing with our shoes and everything else. And so we go through so much more stuff than we used to go through. We used to, you know, the amount of clothes we all have is much higher than it was, you know, when I was a kid or my mom was younger. And people had things, they bought good things, they kept them, they took care of them, they patched them, they did alterations on them, you know, and so that things would last a long time. And I think that that's one of the biggest things is our just massive consumption. It's like junk food, and we do that with clothes. And I think that if we all had a little bit more conscientiousness about buying quality things, whether it's secondhand, if you can't afford really good new clothes, get them secondhand, get them fixed up, take care of them, don't just toss stuff out. And I think that that will make the biggest impact of doing things with thought and care versus just quick.
What a fabulous conversation. Carolyn and Holly, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Carolyn Kallenborn is an associate professor in the Textiles and Fashion Design program at UW-Madison. She's the Jane Thiele Professor of Human Ecology, helped develop the Global Artisans Initiative. She's faculty director of the Threads Fashion Show coming up on April 29th. And Holly Easland is a professional apparel designer who freelances. She's also an associate lecturer at UW-Madison. In more than 25 years in the industry, she's worked for companies including American Girl and Lands' End. This hour of the morning show was produced by Keely Boltina and Colleen Leahy. Dave Potraz provided technical direction. Michelle Johnson is executive producer. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and this conversation about fashion, you find it on the Ideas Network.